from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is made in two tragic recent events, both happening in Rochester in the past month. The first, the alleged rape of a 14-year-old girl by a parolee, and the second, the killing of a Rochester police officer, also by a parolee. That has ignited questions about the parole system. Is it staffed sufficiently? What's working? What is not? What changes need to be made? State Senator Joe Robach has helped lead the public discussion, including an online petition. This hour, you will hear comments from Mayor Lovely Warren and Pastor Marlo Washington, among others. You can join the conversation, and my guest in studio is State Senator Joe Robach. Joe, thanks for being here.
Evan, great to be here at XXI and have this opportunity to be on the big Evan Dawson show.
Well, that's not what we call it. We call it Connection. And I appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a busy day for you, Joe. And I want to, before we even get to parole, the community lost another big and just a very significant person, beloved by many. And I know you wanted to say a few words.
Yeah, I just, you know, XXI is the community channel. I just think it's appropriate. Unfortunately, the passing, which we knew was coming, of Joe Floriano, who had pancreatic and liver cancer, is kind of just sad because on two fronts. One, I'm old enough and been here my whole life. I remember when the convention center first opened, which my dad was really involved in with some community leaders. The building was great, but the operations of the facility wasn't at all up to par. And when Joe Floriano came here, I believe about 25 years ago, he really turned it around and made it a class act, where now people come from all over the Finger Lakes region to utilize the Rochester Convention Center and that facility. And then the other part that I just loved about Joe is he was so involved in so many things in the community, Rotary, Ronald McDonald House, always willing to help out, use his own resources, name, and participate. And really, in his everyday life, off the job, even though he wasn't born here in Rochester, was a huge, huge promoter of Rochester and our community, both in words and in actions. And certainly, I know he will not only be missed by me, but many in the community and many of the people that he worked with and lives he touched.
And the building will have his name on it.
Yeah, I think that's very appropriate. That's all new news to us, but I think couldn't have picked a better person.
Yeah, I think that's well said, and a nice tribute and a nice way to start the hour. All right, well, look, it's been, I think we've all had our fill of tragedy in the last month, and it's been a very difficult month for everyone in this community. And now here we are looking at the parole system, and it is such a complex question. Let me start by asking you this, Senator Robach. What's the first question that you have that you want answered or that you wanted answered 3-4 weeks ago when this started to unfold?
Right. Well, you know, these things you have to look at so holistically. And I really do mean that. So I have the honor and privilege of being elected state office, which much of the policy we set impacts things, certainly including public safety. So I think you have to just look at the whole thing, Evan. You know, one, we have to make sure we have the resources in at the entry level of the system to make sure that people have adequate defense, the system is working, and that we get the right person and convict the right person. I want to say that, number one, because I think that is important. Two, the scales have to be totally balanced, both for the offender, or I should say in this case, once they become convicted, hopefully fairly, that the punishment fits the crime. And I think that's where the public is starting to really question and wonder what's happening. So to boil it down, while many people talk about plea bargaining and appropriate sentencing, the legislature, quite frankly, can't control that in any way, shape, or form. That has to be done by judges, attorneys, public defenders, district attorneys, not by our office. But clearly, what the legislature can control are two things: legislative policy and the parole board, which was created by the legislature. So one of the things that I've done, because so many people say, what can we do to try and maybe have some impact is calling the parole board, certainly when appropriate, and people have a history of violent behaviors.
Like Thomas Johnson, unfortunately.
Yeah, yes, all of them. But, you know,
isn't about one case.
When you look at the statistics, yeah. I guess this is my point,
yeah.
that a very small group of people, thank goodness, in our society do the vast majority of violent crimes. It's really not a huge number. So if you put this into any other field or use any other metric to measure and say how you're going to control it, no one will be saying, what can we do to put these people back out on the streets earlier, I don't think. And I do think that's so relevant that, you know, the Department of Parole, the Division of Criminal Justice, they will always cite these statistics. They will say that 75% time is served of all violent criminals. Number one, I think we ought to put that in statute. You cannot be eligible for any early release program to get out. Because what happened in 2000...
For any violent offender.
Correct.
No early
That's how
release.
It used to be. You used to have to serve 75, 80% of your time before you could even get good behavior or be considered for parole. Now, that over the course of time, and I don't say this to be partisan, I say this to be factual. When my Democratic colleagues were to control the entire legislature in 2009 and 10, they applied a lot of things that were previously only voted on by the entire legislature in a more bipartisan way for nonviolent offenders, for Rockefeller drug laws, to be applied to everybody. So I think you could literally go online and see more and more people who have violent records that I think if the general public saw what their history, their jacket was, if you will, their experience, the amount of people they victimized, they wouldn't say that. You know, we know statistically pedophiles, rapists, shooters have high recidivism rates. I wish that wasn't true, but that's the facts. And I believe it's the system's job, again, to try and balance those scales of justice and protect the public. I do think we could be doing a little bit better job of that. I'd like to rescind some of those things.
Rescind any early release for violent offenders?
Not any, but take it back to the old days.
Of at least 75, 80%?
Yes, the department will say that's happening anyways. My thing is if that's happening, let's put it in statute. Let's make sure nobody slips through the cracks.
Codify it.
Yes, make that the law. That's what I think the legislature can do the most. The public can embrace that, not embrace it, depending on what their opinion is. And then the petition is for those people, because sometimes parole's hands are tied. They will tell us, we'd like to keep this person in, but because they got time for good behavior, the extra additional time that was put in the 2009 budget by my colleagues from across the aisle, the New York City folks, GED time, they have to release them. That's a little scary to me. When the parole board says we would like to keep this person longer for public safety and can't, those laws should be changed. There's a lot of bills in there that would be very good. There's also one that says even after completion of sentencing, even if they did 100% of their time, which no one really does, they could be monitored for 18 months after that if they still pose a threat to the public. You know, again, from top to bottom, the system needs to be shored up, not to mention, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, I think more resources needed to be given to parole officers who have to monitor these people. But again, I want to roll that back. Their caseloads have been made gigantic because of the influx of people that have been released, especially in some of these dangerous categories. I'd like to see that reduced just by having them finish out more of their time they were given in court. And I know I'm talking a lot, but, you know, again, when I say the scales of justice be balanced, think of you are a family member, let alone the general public, and you're sitting in the courtroom and a judge says you're going to get, you know, 7 to 15 years. People don't think that person's going to be out in you know, less than that time, or even more, you know, if you just say they get a straight sentence, 12 years, people aren't expecting that person to be out, you know, doing half or two thirds of their time. And they are always shocked when that occurs and happens. And we get those calls all the time.
You hear that all the time.
What can we do? Yeah. You know, this goes back to even former district attorney Howard Rellin. We used to have to do a petition constantly to keep James Moore in prison, who killed that young woman, and then under some of these new laws and changes was trying to get himself out when he agreed to a life without parole sentence. You know, that is the system, but I think the system, again, should do a number of things, starting with making sure we have adequate defense, that we get the right person. Two, the punishment fits the crime. Three, the public is protected. And four, that all the people working in that system have the resources to make sure those things occur.
All right, a couple of things here with State Senator Joe Robach, my guest here for the bulk of this hour. First of all, he mentioned a petition. I've posted the petition that Senator Robach put online. You can find it on my Twitter account, at Evan Dawson, there. And I know a lot of people are already doing that. Second of all, District Attorney Sandra Dorley has made some comments on this issue. She's talked about indeterminate sentencing, sentencing guidelines, et cetera. We reached out to her office, and understandably so, she's backed up a little bit and said, look, you know, I am dealing with the Thomas Johnson case and others, and even though even generalized comments right now, we're in sort of a supercharged area and some very important cases. So she declined to come on for that reason. I suspect we'll hear from her on this in the future. And again, you're going to hear from some other voices on this later in the hour. The Department of Criminal Justice and the Department of Parole, I think they've been a little hesitant to say much right now, Senator, but do you get the sense that they feel understaffed or
sure.
overworked?
I know for a fact, you know, I deal with everyone in this community. I really applaud the work of the men and women. And there's a lot of female parole officers that are not on the street. They're in people's homes. They're monitoring some people who have done some very heinous activity. And they have a very challenging job, but a very important one. And certainly that over time, their caseload has been increased dramatically. And in some cases, not given any more resources or additional bodies in the job, even in some cases taking a cut. I don't think that's a very good thing. However, I want to say this. That is a sliver of the issue we're dealing with here, not the major concern. And I find it unsettling for people that want to bury their head in the sand from the other large predicating factors and somehow almost make it sound like it's the parole officer's fault. I don't think that. I just think given the nature of some of these people, the more they feel they're being monitored, the less likely at least they're going to act or, you know, do something to victimize somebody else. But, you know, clearly, you know, we had one case in New York where somebody with an ankle holster that I believe should have never been out of jail, and shortly after leaving his parole officer, went out and killed a 78-year-old woman with all those safeguards in place. So, again, we have to make sure the system's working right from top to bottom. I also know of many parole officers who have been assaulted, held hostage, actually on the job, if you can believe that, the person that's supposed to be an authority. So, yes, I think when I said we holistically have to look at the whole system from defense to sentencing to parole board, yes, and also look at making sure parole officers can do their job.
Okay, and before we get back to the phones here, Victoria, Paul, Peter, we're coming to you in just a moment here with State Senator Joe Robach. I know your point is that's not the core of it. Holistically, yes, the core of it seems to me, at least I hope this is fair to say, that you're saying the core is who are we releasing and why, and how do we make sure whoever is released is not essentially too soon? And this is a complex question, but just on the issue of parole officers in general and parole meetings, if you miss a single meeting, should you be reincarcerated? Should you have to do, if you're a violent offender, should you have to hit every single checkpoint to avoid reincarceration?
Yeah, I believe that should kind of be the standard, unless there's some very, very strong mitigating circumstances, like something medical or everything else. Those people are obligated, as a condition of their sentencing, to be in touch with their parole officer. I can assure you, many are not.
Okay, and so when it comes to release, you made the point that rapists, pedophiles, violent offenders are a small part of the population, but you're saying the stats say recidivism rates are very high there, and you wish it weren't so.
Correct.
If that is the case, then why do... Do you want longer sentences? You can't incarcerate some people for their life, but are you indicating that the Thomas Johnsons of the world should have no release until they're deemed okay to be released? I mean, some people will serve, let's say you get a 7 to 15 year sentence as an example. You said nobody really serves 15. Let's say you do. Right. But after 15, should it still be up to a board to say you're free?
Well, if you serve your sentence, you could. There's another piece of legislation, I believe by Senator Nozzolio, that would say even at, given that circumstance, you could be monitored for 18 months after that just to make sure you're not a threat to the public or
you
at least
support that?
Have a better chance. I would support that, absolutely. There's so many things. So I can't say. I think the nature of the crime, we passed the bill about habitual offenders supposed to be being in there for a long time. It just doesn't seem to be happening or being applied, and I'm not sure of all the reasons by that. Though I do know there were some major changes in the law where, again, my colleagues from across the aisle literally put in a statute mandatory programs that if people did certain things or applied for it, they could get earlier time off, and that seems to be diminishing that number of time served. And we've heard from parole board, not me, saying, oh, no, we couldn't keep this person in because the laws that were passed over the course of time, but predominantly in 9-10, made more people eligible earlier. So it's out of our hands. That is of concern to me, yes.
We had Bonnie Venton on this program last week. She is a close friend of Heather Boyum, the Fairport teacher who was hit and killed when she was riding her bike or her bicycle 2 years ago, July, and she was hit and killed by a man and a woman on a motorcycle and a car, and it turns out that the man driving, riding the motorcycle, had been out for 20 days and had had three other DWIs, Mark Skirbo. This would have been number four. Now, the jury in sentencing didn't know that and wasn't allowed to know that. And Bonnie Venton on this program said, look, 2 points. She said, I'm emotional because I lost a friend, but some people are not ready to be out. And number two, why is a jury not allowed to know a prior history? Because Skirbo's sentence ends up smaller, and she wanted that jury to know that.
Except for the only thing that I would disagree is, while the jury doesn't know, the judge does at sentencing. So, you know, both things. But clearly, there's a case. You know, you want to balance those scales every way you can. But here's a guy. Total disregard for anybody else. Look, three times, I'm going to be out there and I'm going to have disregard. If you're in my way, too bad for you. Yes, that's very different to me and should be sentenced and treated very differently than a person that does something like that one time.
All right, but what if a Mark Skirbo serves a full sentence? Let's say he is in prison for a third DWI and serves a full sentence. Part of the problem is if he is not rehabbed in any way, and that's another part of the conversation I hear, is people saying, look, when people are incarcerated, they're not getting better. They're not being rehabbed. They're not ready to reenter. They get out. Some of the violent offenders, from what I'm hearing, Senator Roebuck, end up with $40 and they go to a shelter, and it's like, good luck to you.
Well, you know, I'm really not an expert on knowing, and thank goodness I haven't been there. But I will tell you this. In New York State correctional facilities, there's opportunities for people to get GED, other access to other education, training in certain job programs and jobs inside of our facilities. There is also Alcoholic Anonymous programs. There's drug treatment programs that people can, utilize and partake in if they so choose. Of course, we cannot mandate that. Some things can, they have to do some things to, at least in terms of functioning or having a job in some cases. But other than that, they can't. I don't know if that rehabilitates a person if they don't want to, but I think there are opportunities even in there to try and, I guess, move in a different direction.
Yeah.
And this is the big thing, if you so choose.
If you so choose. The governor earlier this year talked about tuition for inmates who were on good behavior, and that got defeated pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Support
well, that
or
was,
oppose.
That was for college. And they can take college credits, but the idea of giving somebody a four-year free college tuition when people who haven't broken the law can't access that, on top of free room and board and meals, if you will, and we all know what the cost of incarceration is today, that did seem a little excessive to me.
I understand the point, but if it's, what is it, $60,000 a year to incarcerate somebody, something like that, if you can reduce
That would be on top of that. You would be adding a cost on top of that of about $15,000 a year. I don't think it's $60,000 either.
Okay, but if that reduces the recidivism rate, could you potentially have a taxpayer savings?
I don't believe so. Plus, there's was nothing in there to say, if you take this, you have to take it seriously. You have to graduate or get it done in a certain period. It's not like when you're, you know, on the outside and you're paying your own money or borrowing money. So I think it's very different. But there are a lot of places that do have college courses available, other things of that nature. Even people that will do other kinds of skill training that could be helpful to somebody in terms of employment when they get out.
All right, before we get to the phones, last point on this before our callers chime in. Where do things stand now? Do you believe that there will be either legislative or some kind of functional changes when it comes to the way parole operates?
I hope so. I think if you ask most people, where I think there's been a disconnect is they'll say, oh, no, for this or this, you know, they are serving 75%, 80% of their sentence. And then you really hear story after story where that's not the case, or you hear from the victim's family or crime victims groups that are not only questioning, but oftentimes distraught, heartbroken, maybe even furious over what was applied. So I think if we can have a system, again, we get the right person. Two, has the punishment fit the crime and make sure people really serve out the bulk of that sentence, but do have some incentive to try and improve in jail, be a good inmate, and get some time off for good behavior, albeit 20%, whatever it could be, eligibility. I think that would be much fairer, would protect the public much more, and serve the public much better. You're right, you asked earlier. I would go one step above and beyond that and say, and also have that 18 months of supervision by parole to even make a further likelihood that somebody else would be victimized. I would be for those things, and I'm going to try to drive that and put legislation in to do just that. In the interim, we're calling on parole, even though in the cases which are shrinking, where they may or may not let somebody out, do not fold to that pressure budgetarily to let people out. You know, to me, the Rockefeller drug laws that applied to nonviolent offenders, very, very different population group than the one we're talking about.
And that was a mistake, you said.
I believe it is.
Okay.
And it seems to be having damaging effects all across our state.
All right, let's take a very short break. If you're waiting on the phone, you are next. We're coming to the phones with State Senator Joe Robach as we talk about what he'd like to see happen with parole in the wake of tragic events in our community. Short break, and your call's next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Book of Mormon is coming back to Rochester, and one of the stars of the show will join us live. We'll find out why the show is such a smashing success, even if it pushes the boundaries of comfort and decorum. Then we'll look at the full calendar for the coming Broadway season with Albert Nocciolino, the presenter who makes so many of these shows happen. That's coming up next hour on Connections.
A Opening this week at the Little Theater, My Old Lady pairs Downton Abbey's Maggie Smith with Kevin Klein in a charming and witty story abroad. A down-and-out New Yorker inherits a Parisian apartment from his estranged father, but is stunned to find a 92-year-old English woman living there. He can only have the apartment after she passes away. So, he's in the will, she's in the way. But there's more to this story than meets the eye. See details for My Old Lady at thelittle.org.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and glad to have State Senator Joe Robach in studio with us for the bulk of the hour. Let's get to the phones. Victoria in Rochester. Thanks for calling, Victoria.
Hello, Evan and Joe. This is Victoria Cayulani DeSico. I'm calling on behalf of myself, my husband Wayne Knox at the University of Rochester, and our Hawaiian family here in Monroe County. On February 3rd, our beautiful, beloved Edlyn Chun was robbed and shot to death on Hazelwood Terrace in her home, and then found in Tryon Park. It was by a parolee 3 months earlier that was let out of jail and murdered her in her home. Shot her twice in the head, and she was gone. Yes, I would like to see reform. Absolutely, reform on this.
Yeah, you know, again, those losses are tragic, sad, and while you can't certainly control everyone, as we all have free will, I do think, I agree with you, that, you know, the system certainly needs to take a closer look and, for lack of a better term, a more cautious approach to who they let out. Because you just put a face right here in Rochester on what can be the unfortunate circumstances when somebody did this. And clearly, if we can never control what they'll do for a lifetime, but let's say that individual had served the full sentence and it was it would have been another 3 years that may have prevented that, at least in that time frame. So again, we're very sorry for your loss. That's what the dialogue's all about, how we can reform the system to make it hopefully better, fairer for the public, and avoid more tragedies, victimization, as you just pointed out so sadly.
Go ahead, Victoria.
So personally, what can I do to help?
I think, you know, you can advocate for changes to the law to make sure violent felons have to fill out more of their time. And the two things that I'm trying to do, the other one is calling the parole board, that when it's up to them, that they certainly try to make people serve out their time and kind of balance those scales more to not budgetary needs, but public safety needs and concerns.
Right. Well, he was placed in prison as a juvenile, and at age, I believe, 24 or 25, they could not hold him, but they also said as he was leaving that he would be back on a felony. Absolutely. There was no doubt, because he was such a horrible monster through his prison time. So how could someone like that just be let out? And with the knowledge that he would definitely commit another crime. I mean, they knew it. They knew it. Within 3 months, he had murdered this incredible spirit.
Yeah.
And so what can I do? I'm serious. What can I do to help you, Joe?
Again, I don't know the specifics.
I would be on your team if I could.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, someone may come up with a better idea than me, but the two things that I've been promoting, and I'd be happy to promote something else if it's better, would be one, the department always says that these people are filling out 75 to 80% of their term if they're violent felons. I think that's not accurate information. I'd like to put that in statute. So that would be one thing that concretely would put violent felons, pedophiles, those types of people in incarceration longer. And then the part two, and you can sign that now, we have an online petition in the interim asking parole board, not parole officers, the parole board, when they have the power, to err on the side of public safety, if you will, and make sure those people serve out a longer sentence whenever possible.
Absolutely. But there is one other thing. He had a bracelet on his ankle as he committed this crime. he was being monitored.
Right. That's why.
Who was doing that?
I don't see. I almost think that if a person is that dangerous, that you have to go through all these things before you let them out, wouldn't common sense dictate that perhaps they should be in a correctional facility if there's that much more likelihood and that you have to apply all these things to them? And then there are some other things in there too, even rolling it back further, Victoria, on are we meeting the needs of adequate sentencing for these violent people as well? And that's sort of a separate but related conversation.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I would like to, Joe, talk to you further someday about this.
Yeah, feel free to give me a call at my office anytime.
Victoria, thank you. Joe, before we get right back to the phones, real briefly, should sentences be longer in general for more violent offenders?
I think that the case should dictate the sentence. I could tell you anecdotally, in the case of Mr. Johnson, was involved in several shootings and bad activities, people were shocked that his sentence was 3 years and out to do more damage.
We have a comment or question from a listener. What are the actual stats? How many people actually have a stale in jail or prison that is at least the minimum? I'm sensing from you, Senator Robach, that it's hard to get the actual numbers, but you sense what's even being reported is not fully accurate.
Yes, I think anecdotally these numbers are put out. I don't know if those are statistics from the last 30 years of incarceration, but I think fairly recently, again, since 9/10, when those laws were made by my Democratic colleagues, I think that's changed the game significantly, and you're seeing people, violent people, out earlier and earlier. To look at sentencing would be a whole nother study on what's happening and what jurisdictions, and you know. But to me, it shouldn't go by that. It should go by the likelihood of people being a recidivist or hurting more people, as well as satisfying the victim and their family, which of course can never be made whole, but shouldn't walk away in a system thinking this is awful.
Well, and let me also say to our listeners, this is sort of one of these organic conversations that's going to need to continue. We'll do our best to follow up and look at what happened in 2009 and 2010. As Joe is saying that, again, he's saying his Democratic colleagues pushed a change in the law that in the senator's mind has put the violent offenders out earlier. We'll follow up with that and we'll continue that conversation.
But a series of legislation to give people mandatory time to get out earlier. And it used to be more just applied, only good behavior time, and the rule was, 80 percentile.
All right, let's get, this is Paul in Irondequoit. Paul, thanks for waiting. Go ahead, you're on with Senator Joe Robach.
I did a little study on indeterminate sentencing. In 2007, the change was supposed to come, and Elliot Spitzer shot it down. So we're stuck with the system that was bad then and bad now. There's more reasons that the system is bad. If two people both commit the same crime, both are in jail, in order to meet the budget requirements, a person's released early, the other person could be doing their full sentence. There's no standard of anything. It really revolves around the budget, as Duffy stated recently on television. So until they probably get to the point where they're not holding so many people for, I would say, crimes of lesser problems, unless they expand the system or let these smaller crimes people not have to do as much time, that's the only way they'll have the room in the jails to keep the people with the longer time.
Paul, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Joe.
Paul, I agree with everything you're saying except for one thing. They're actually closing. We don't have to expand the system. They're closing jails because we've let so many nonviolent offenders out or shorten their time, especially with those previous changes to the Rockefeller drug laws.
Do you agree with that, by the
way? Yeah, I voted for that and supported that because I think those people with counseling, with drug treatment, can turn their lives around. And while sometimes other people are hurt by it, they're not usually responsible for direct damage or death to other people, except sometimes themselves or the people that love them. It's a little bit different. So we actually have done that in New York, let some lesser crimes out. This goes a little bit deeper and is a little bit more specific. So hopefully, unfortunately spurred by all these bad crimes that have happened by parole people, We'll see everybody from the governor on down wanting to have some dialogue on how we can better protect this public and maybe work on the system to make it better all around.
All right. Listeners, if you're waiting to talk, the senator's got to get out of here by about 12:50, and so we've got to try to move quickly. So if I come to you, try to just be ready to go. This is Matt in Rochester. Go ahead, Matt.
I have two comments. One, I was convicted of a DWI. It was my fault. I'm not taking anybody else responsible for it. But I had a treatment center at Ridgemont Hospital or whatever unity it's called.
Park Ridge, yeah.
All that I did was take a pee test and watch a video. There was no rehabilitation. There was no anything to make me better as a person or try to realize why I had the drug or alcohol problem that I had. I think it's a money grab. And number two, I have a friend, his brother-in-law is a police officer in Irondequoit. He was pulled over, convicted of a DWI on the spot, or, you know, he was arrested for it. He called his brother-in-law, and all he had to do was pay for his car being impounded. The DWI charge was dropped. It never happened. All he had to do was pay for that. I think the DWI laws are garbage. They don't rehabilitate anybody, and a lot of people have loopholes to get out of it. What do you think of that?
Strong stuff.
Yeah,
Matt. Go ahead,
no one should. Obviously, the law should be applied uniformly. The one thing I was going to say is, off of anything else, in New York State, most people want to get their driver's license back, so they get what's called a conditional discharge, but they have to go to the school and the program, which I have watched and observed, and is pretty good in terms of talking about the dangers, the statistics, some of the bad things that happen in terms of crashes and death with alcohol-related things. There's even a victims panel. So hopefully people are having to go through that part of it minimally, and hopefully that's making a difference. Overall, the DWI from 10 or 20 years ago when they started the DWI program, the fatalities in New York State have roughly been cut in half every year, so it is working to some degree.
This is David in Pittsford. Go ahead, David.
Hi. I'd like to ask the senator to expand his thinking a little bit on this recidivism associated with education. Obviously, a lot of people think it's unfair to, even if it's cost-effective, to provide college to inmates in prison. But the answer, which is not considered, is, okay, the answer that is assumed is that therefore we won't give inmates college education. The answer that's ignored is that we should provide college education to anybody in New York State who is able to be admitted to a state-funded institution. And I know it would cost money, but these prisons cost money too, and if these people were successful, they would be paying taxes, and we would get the money back because college education is a good investment.
All right, David, thank you. Let's let Senator Robach jump in.
You just real quickly, Dave, you know, I hear what you're saying. You know, I think you probably know this. It sounds like you have a lot of knowledge. So to go to SUNY or MCC, you know, the cost is really much higher. It's already offset by tax dollars, and we are trying to make it accessible. And for people who are low income, between C-STEP, HEOP, Pell Grants, they are able to do that. The question really was is, should we fully apply that to people who are incarcerated as well? And that's where it gets a little bit dicey. But there are many programs and many education programs in a lot of our prisons even today, even though they can't, quote, have full funded yearly round college at the current time.
Bonnie in Rochester. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things to say, but I obviously think nobody is comfortable with somebody who has a very questionable history and could be violent to be just released willy-nilly. At the same time, I think, like so many complex issues, you can't just pick out one area. The history, and a couple of callers ago said that the history of the Rockefeller drug laws caused so many thousands of people, mainly people of color, to be taken from their communities and having long sentences. That whole political mess has a long history to it. And again, you know, I realize it's gotten less now, but that messes up the system. And you don't just patch it together at the last minute after you've spent years of messing it up. And besides that, you know, the criminal justice system like most complex systems, needs to take into consideration the broader picture of, you know, you referencing jobs. Well, the jobs we have now available are low-paying jobs. The middle-class jobs you can work up to are going like crazy, and it doesn't look like that's going to get any better. So you can't keep separating out. Again, nobody wants people who are violent to be just left out. But to take one piece, it's not going to work. It never does. And you have to have the whole picture here in order to make the kind of changes that you really need. And also the other thing is a lot of the services to prevent people, younger people, from getting into some of these situations have also been cut. And the state budget to public education has cut. And if a man who just spoke about,
that's not
about
true, Bonnie,
funding public education wants to know who to vote for, vote for the Green Party candidate who wants
Let Senator Robach respond because he's running out of time.
I actually respect Bonnie a great deal and know her, and I know she has a lot of passion, but that's not true. New York spends $20,000 per pupil, $9,000 above the national average on trying to educate people and give them a good chance. My only thing I would say is, and we did reform the Rockefeller drug laws, but to me, Bonnie, where we may disagree, no matter what your experience in life is or what choices you've made or what you can or can't access, never gives you permission to rape, harm, assault a woman, kill somebody. It just can't be tolerated. The system has to try and fairly prevent that, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Senator Robach, thank you for taking the time here. If you're still waiting on the line here, you can join the conversation. I know Senator Robach's got to get to another public event.
I apologize. I'm going to the we're naming the road down there in between Midtown and the buildings after Andrew Langston, who was not only the founder of DKX, but the father of my good friend Andre. And I'm not only going there in my official capacity, but personal, and don't want to miss that. So thank you for everybody for listening and the great calls, and you, Evan, for giving me the opportunity.
Well, thank you, and we'll see you again. We'll continue this conversation. Okay. That's Senator Joe Robach taking the time to join us and tell us about his plans as well here. If you want to see the petition that the senator and his office have put out, you can see it again. We've linked to it on our Twitter feed, at Evan Dawson. You can see it there. And I think what happened is, look at the senator walking out and leaving the door open. Look at... That's really funny. I think what happens here is that there's so many different threads as to how to fix this and what the problems really are here. You've got the question of whether rehab is actually happening at the inside prisons and whether people are being released any better or even the same than when they went in terms of whether they're going to reoffend and what opportunities they have. What I'd like to do is play a couple of comments on this issue that we've heard on this program in recent days. First, let's listen to Mayor Lovely Warren. She was on here just a couple of days after Officer Daryl Pearson was killed, and the question of parole came up. This is Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren on the subject.
Parolees do have a parole officer that they have to report to and be in contact with. If they do not comply, then they can be violated for parole. And so right now, you know, for me, and I think for our community, working with our governor and our state legislature and understanding what that process is, what, you know, was it followed here? And if it was followed, you know, how can we tighten it a little bit? Because, you know, it's a system that you want people to be able to return to the community. You want people in the community to be safe, as well as the parolees that are returning. And there are a number of them that have done the right thing when they have came home. You know, the city of Rochester has a partnership with CEO. We have a number of people out actually cleaning up our streets right now that are working with CEO and doing a great job and wanting to be good, productive citizens. And the process and our system of justice requires that we, you know, that people be rehabilitated, and we want to give them that option. Unfortunately, the last couple times we've had, you know, not only the young lady that was assaulted, you know, by a parolee, but this situation here, we had an officer that was killed by one.
That's Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren talking about parole and that question of what happens when a violent offender like Thomas Johnson gets out and you get $40 in cash and a bed at a shelter. You know, not true for every single case, but many times a person like that might be in sort of a different kind of challenge than you and I would face on a daily basis. And another question for Senator Robach and other elected leaders that we'll continue to have going forward is the question about banning the box. It's the question of whether the folks who are released and truly want to do well, want to do the right things to get a productive life back together, if they have a realistic chance to do that. And there's a great debate about that. And we will continue to have those kind of discussions here to let you weigh in and hear from the people who would like to ban the box, so to speak, and those who say, no, employers have to have the right to know if you have a history. I also can recall talking to parole officers, some great people in this community, Joe Stephanie and others who do tremendous work every day. And they always caution us that, yes, most people who are paroled follow the rules. They go to the meetings, they show up where they're supposed to. They're going to do their best to build a more productive life. But there is that that segment that does not, and the question is, how do we handle them? Let's listen to Pastor Marlo Washington, who was on this program yesterday, and I asked him about Senator Robach's reforms or some of what Senator Robach is talking about to make it to make the system a little different for parolees. Here's what Pastor Washington of Christ Community Church said.
Been already talking with our elected leaders about that, because we think that is one of the facets we need in order to bring some control about the civility and criminal thinking and activity. We saw it in a week back to back, from the young man who did the alleged rape to Mr. Johnson, and both were out early, parole, the whole thing. We need to fix the parole system, and I think that has to happen immediately. And so, but now that's going to have to be a task that we, the community, must pressure our elected officials to submit a new bill or do whatever it takes to get to the governor to put more money into the parole office, because the power is not RPD. The power is the parole system. That's where the power is, because they don't need a warrant to go into those houses. They just knock on the door. Hi, I'm here, 9 o'clock at night. I want to know, is John Doe here or Jane Sue's here? You know, and that's what it takes.
That's Pastor Marlo Washington of Christ Community Church. Again, his point that he does support a lot of what he's hearing from State Senator Joe Robach about reforms to the parole system, but he is interested in seeing essentially just more staffing, more manpower and woman power on the streets. These men and women in parole who do the work, and it can be very dangerous work. And Pastor Washington is saying we have to put more priority in that to give more people the opportunity to work this, because caseloads can be overwhelming in any line of work. But so often a caseload can be very, very difficult. So that's Pastor Washington. We'll see what happens going forward here when it comes to sentencing, and we'll do our best to try to get a little bit more when it comes to the stats and numbers. We've had a lot of questions this hour from listeners who are curious about the actual numbers, and State Senator Joe Robach is saying it's hard to get an actual number when it comes to that question, who is actually serving a full sentence? How many serve partial sentences? How many are out on good behavior? You know, what's the average sentence served, especially for violent crimes, whether it's rape, assault, manslaughter, and other things here? What is the average time served there? And State Senator Joe Robach is saying he's a little concerned that he thinks the numbers are not fully representative of what's been happening in the last 5 years. So you're getting a sense for the landscape on some very complex and difficult issues. We've heard Rob Scott, the director of Cornell's prison inmate education program. Now, Cornell has done some private work. A lot of the work they've done is essentially private contracting work. And Rob Scott is saying that the Bard College model works, that he thinks that the recidivism rate does drop when you educate inmates who want it, who are in good behavior. But you've got Senator Robach and many others saying, look, we're already in a budget pinch here, and what's the message to taxpayers if we don't offer universal education, but we do offer it to violent offenders? So that debate will continue as well. A lot of moving parts here. I want to thank you and your calls this hour. I really appreciate the participation from our listeners and online as well. And if you didn't get a chance to get through with State Senator Robach, we will have him back soon on this topic and others as we kind of go throughout the fall here, because this topic is not going to go away. We're going to get a short break in just a second, and my brief disclaimer is that I think we need a bit of a tone break. It's been a rough month in many ways, and we've had to cover a lot of very heavy subjects, and we'll continue to do that. But sometimes on this program, we need a little bit of a break. And next hour, we're going to look at the Rochester Broadway Theater League, their season, their upcoming season. How did they get the Book of Mormon back? And we're going to have one of the stars from Book of Mormon on this program coming up at about 1:15. So a lot to bring you next hour. And if you've got had a lot of heavy news on your mind lately, we'll try to put a little bit more of a hop on your step and think about some of the good arts programs we have. Rochester Broadway Theater League's Broadway season for the 2014-2015 season. Thanks to State Senator Joe Robach and you. Short break and more on member-supported public radio next.